right, off and running. We go to week one of the NFL season tonight. Gotta love it. Dallas plus 7.5 in Philadelphia to take on the Eagles. And this is season number 25 of the Times Union NFL Picks with the panel. And Pete Doherty's headed up that panel since year one, and I've been right along his side since year one as well. And we welcome Pete Doherty back for another season in the National Football League. Good morning, Pete. How are you?
Good morning. Two last men standing here. We made it all through 25 years, and no one else has done that. So I guess we should get some credit for that.
Absolutely, we get credit for that. And it's popular. It's fun. We have a good time with it. I get a lot of comments on it. That is not changed at all. And some years that I'm doing really well, people thank me for the picks. Other years when I've not had a good year, they're like, man, I follow you and the Times Union, you're really having a rough season. So people do pay attention. And Pete, to begin the week one, it doesn't get a whole lot better than the Dallas Cowboys at the Philadelphia Eagles tonight, with Dallas at plus 7.5. I'm all over Philadelphia in this game to get off to a great start.
Okay, can you afford to give another point though? Because that line's up to 8.5 now.
8.5. Wow. I'll still take Philly.
Yeah, it's funny. You know, it's, there's two games on the slate this week that I considered for the survivor pools that have become so popular, and this is one of them. Somehow, I just have a feeling Dallas is going to keep this game close. Just all the controversy going on and stuff. Philadelphia might be a little high on their Super Bowl win from last year. I like the Eagles here to win this game, I think. I didn't want to take them in the survivor pool, though I took the other team, but I like Dallas plus the 8.5.
Yeah, I could see it. I mean, I do think Dallas will score tonight, and I think their offense is good. They added Pickens, and I think Dak could have a good year. I just don't think their defense is going to be nearly as good. They just lost Parsons, and Philadelphia can really run the football. Might be one of the best running football teams in the National Football League, and they've got this guy named Saquon Barkley, who I absolutely love at running back. All right, Kansas City. That is the Thursday game. Tomorrow in Brazil, Kansas City -3 against the LA Chargers. Pete, I'll let you go first on this one.
Another interesting game. The Chargers are going to be better this year. I don't think Kansas City is going to run away with the AFC West, but I still think they're the better team here. I think they've got something to prove after the Super Bowl loss. Mahomes has got a better cast of weapons this year. So I'll take the Chiefs -3.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I'll go Kansas City. I mean, Kansas City is going to be Kansas City. I'm not going to go in that direction to begin the year, but I don't think it'll be a cakewalk for the Chiefs, but I do take them to beat the Chargers in Brazil -3. And then you roll into Sunday. Let's go Tampa Bay -2.5 in Atlanta. Give me the Falcons at home to get off to a good start.
I can't agree with that. Tampa Bay is a much better team than Atlanta. I think the Falcons still have Penix, a quarterback, hasn't played a whole lot. I like Tampa Bay with Baker Mayfield.
All right, the Steelers at the Jets. Whoa, that's one of the headlines for sure, with Aaron Rodgers going up against his former team, Justin Fields struggling to throw the ball downfield this preseason, big loss on the offensive line. I think Rodgers is going to have a good season, Pete. And the Steelers defense is phenomenal, as we all know. Pittsburgh -2.5. I think it's a Steelers victory on Sunday at 1:00.
This is the game I wrestled with the most. I'm going to agree with you on Pittsburgh just because of the Steelers defense. Although with all the problems they had in the offseason trying to get guys signed, and I think the Jets are going to be improved this year. I think things are a little quieter in the Jets camp now, but I think they're going to be better. But I finally went with Aaron Rodgers getting some, I don't know if you call it revenge or not, but I like him winning in the against his old team.
Yeah, it will be a revenge for sure for Aaron Rodgers, who we haven't seen in a while take a snap, but we'll see him this weekend. All right, here's a couple in a row here, Pete. Miami +1.5 at Indianapolis. Daniel Jones, let's go. I got the Colts in this one, and the Giants +6.5 at Washington. I think the Giants keep this really close. I think the Giants have a chance to flat out win this game. I've got the G-men here going to Washington against the Commanders. Maybe a surprise in week one.
Maybe it's a good omen. We're disagreeing on games. I hope it's a good omen for me anyways. I like Miami and Indianapolis, even though the Colts are favored. The Colts, I think, are a mess. Dolphins are a pretty big mess too, but I just think they've got more talent than the Colts, will find a way to win that game. I actually applaud your courage to take the Giants. I really wanted to take the Giants in this game. I think they're going to keep it close. If I start picking 6.5-point underdogs to win the game, I'm going to get behind in a hurry. So I've taken Washington, but I like the Giants to cover.
All right, I got two road teams winning here in the next two picks. Arizona -5.5 to win and take care of business in New Orleans. Saints seem like a team that's going to be one of those teams that will be struggling this year. And you might say the same for the Cleveland Browns, and they're hosting the Cincinnati Bengals, who I'm very high on, certainly with Joe Burrow. I hope their defense is at least okay this year. I think the Bengals are going to win a lot of games. So I got Arizona -5.5 at New Orleans, and I got the Bengals -5.5 winning in Cleveland.
Yeah, the Arizona game is now up to 6.5. The Saints are a mess. I think they may be the worst team in football this season. Even though they're at home, I like the Cardinals -6.5. And I also agree with the Cincinnati, Cleveland, another team that's a mess is the Browns. I applaud the Bengals for playing their starters some in the preseason just so they don't get off to the slow start. Remember last year they lost to New England?
Yeah,
in the opener.
They sure do.
They're trying to avoid that. And it's, you know, not an easy game at Cleveland, a rivalry game, but I like the Bengals, and I'm going to actually give the points, or I'm going to take the points with Cleveland. 5.5 is a lot of points, so I think that's a close game. Look for the Bengals to win and the Browns to cover.
Yeah, can the Bengals defense help out Joe Burrow? That's how I look at it. Like, Joe Burrow is one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. Statistically, last year, I think he was the best. He's sitting on another great season with that Bengals offense. Can the defense at least be okay and try to help the offense win some games this year? We'll find out. All right, next two picks for me, both home teams. I've got New England winning at home against Las Vegas and Jacksonville at home winning against Carolina to begin the year.
And I think both of those home teams will be much better this year. Certainly the Patriots will be better with Mike Vrabel as coach, and they've gotten a few more weapons for May there. So I like the Patriots -2.5. Same with Jacksonville. I mean, Jacksonville can't be as bad as they've looked the last couple of years. I think with Trevor Lawrence, the quarterback, this is a make or break year for him. He's getting all the big money. He needs to show it. And I think against Carolina, which is still a rebuilding program, I'll take the Jaguars -3.
All right, next up with Pete Doherty, we're talking NFL Times Union picks. You can see them in the paper on Sunday tonight. Everybody, it was actually tonight's game's in the paper, but everybody's on the same page tonight here, taking Philadelphia to win. San Francisco -2.5 at Seattle. I got the 49ers getting off to a good start here, Pete. And I have Denver at home beating Tennessee. The line there is +7.5.
Yeah, I agree on both counts. I wrestled a little bit with this. San Francisco, 5-11 last year, 5-12 or whatever they were. They had a poor record last year. Everybody seems to think they're going to win the NFC West. I'm not so sure, but they're going to win the West. They better win tonight or win Sunday in Seattle. I think they will, -2.5. The Tennessee-Denver game, I believe, is up to 8.5 now. That's my other survivor pool pick. I like the I still like the Broncos to roll in this game. The Titans are the defense is decent, but their offense is going to be a work in progress.
Yeah, I think a long year with Tennessee and Denver, I think, will be pretty good. All right, then I got a string of home teams winning here to close things out. Let's take the next two. I've got the L.A. Rams. I think they're sitting on a big season again, taking on Houston +2.5. I like the Rams. And then what should be a great game, Detroit +2.5, Pete, at Green Bay. I'll go with the Packers, Micah Parsons, the whole bit there. Green Bay's all in to make a run at the Super Bowl. I think they have the team to do it. So give me Green Bay at home against Detroit.
Another disagreement here. I like Houston on the road. Just the Rams with Stafford, he's missed most of training camp. I believe he is going to start on Sunday, but I wonder if he's missed too much time. He might be a little bit rusty. The Rams might have a better roster right now, but I like Houston to pull the upset in L.A. +2.5. The Detroit-Green Bay game, what a great 4-25 game for reviewers. I have this in week one, I think, is super. Obviously, all the attention will be on the Green Bay defense with Micah Parsons a part of it. I think he's going to play sparingly, though. But I think Green Bay at home is going to win this game. I'll give the 2.5.
There's a lot of headline games, my friend, this weekend in week one, starting tonight. But maybe none bigger than the Sunday night game. The Baltimore Ravens +1.5 against the Buffalo Bills. I still want to take the Ravens to win, and I think they could easily win this game. But I did pick Buffalo. We'll see how it goes Sunday night. The Ravens are just, they're a great team. And I think Buffalo defensively might struggle a little bit here. I'm going Buffalo, but I think that I could very well be wrong on that pick.
Yeah, this might surprise you coming from a Bills homer, but I'm taking Baltimore. I just think the Ravens have a better roster. Like you said, the Bills' defense has some question marks in it. And the thing is, I think the Ravens need this game more than the Bills, if that makes any sense, in week one. The Bills, even if they lose this game, the Bills probably are going to be 6-1 going into the Kansas City game in week nine. So, I don't think there's an urgency for the Bills to win this game. They're at home. That should help them. I do expect a close game, but I think the Ravens have a better roster and a little bit more urgency in that AFC North.
All right, and the final pick of the week, the Monday night game, the Minnesota Vikings at the Chicago Bears. Minnesota -1.5. Give me the Bears at home to get off to a good start with the new head coach.
I agree with that. I'm a little surprised by the line that the Vikings would be favored on the road against a division rival like this. And the Bears have more weapons now, and they have a new coach that I think will get Caleb Williams to come closer to whatever that his potential is. I love the Bears at home, and so far, 3 out of 4 people have submitted their picks to me have taken the Bears. So I'm a little surprised by that line. So if they want to give us 1.5, we'll take them.
Yeah, there you go. All right, so we have a mixed bag here, but I think we might disagree in week one more than we agree, Pete. So someone's going to get off to a really good start, and someone might not. And honestly, I know it's a long year, but getting off to a good start in the first 2 or 3 weeks kind of sets the tone for the rest of the season. You don't want to dig yourself in too big of a hole here when you start these NFL picks in the TU.
Absolutely correct on that. You don't want to get too big a hole. Then you start picking upsets to try to catch up, and you don't usually catch them. You know, I know we disagree on a lot of picks. I wouldn't be surprised if we just split them and wind up with a similar record after week one. It seems that's the way it works out.
I don't even – how many times have you won this thing, flat out won it?
0.
Okay. And I've how many times have I flat out won it?
Don't have that in front of me. I want to – once or twice.
Yeah.
So.
It hasn't been a lot. I know I've won it once, and it probably is maybe 2. At the most 2 times in 25 years, 2 times. But the deal is now it's changed because we never used to include the spread back in the day. Now we include the spread because everyone is betting and on their phones and DraftKings and everything else. So when they're making looking at our picks, they're also looking at the line to see if we're going to get the pick right when it comes to the point spread. And I think that's a big deal to some people as well.
Yeah, it is. It certainly adds an element to it. I don't pay, I just, it's hard enough just to pick the winners without getting the spread involved. I mean, that's always, to me, a crapshoot. It's a 50-50 proposition to do that. I just fired up our all-time records. It's just interesting. You and I are the only two who have been in it of all 25 years. Your correct percentage is 636 and mine is 629. So we're pretty close over those 25 years. Although you do have the edge, and you were second last year, so you can hang your hat on that. And you were first among the TV people last year.
All right, there we go. That's always a big deal right there for me, for sure. All right, Pete. Well, listen, we're off and running. Enjoy tonight's opening game between Dallas and Philadelphia, and have a great weekend. We'll talk this time next week.
Okay, Roger. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Pete. Pete Doherty, 25 years, ready to roll again.
Impressive, buddy.
In the Times Union. Yeah. Game one to the Cats as they continue to have a phenomenal season, postseason time, and a wild card round last night in front of a nice crowd of 2,400 at the Joe. The manager is Greg Taggart, and he joins us here on Big Board Sports on 104.5 The Team. Greg, it's Roger. How are you, my friend? Congratulations.
Good. Thanks, Roger. Thanks. Yeah, it was a wonderful night at the Joe, and you just said it, 2,400 people. It stayed till the very last pitch. It was quite an evening, and couldn't be happier for the fans and our ownership group and the players.
Yeah, I just called Rick Murphy here before our show at 10 o'clock and congratulated him. And on to game two you go. But what was the difference last night? It looked like, once again, really good starting pitching. And then you got the timely hitting. And even though you got down 1-0 in the game, no panic, came back and scored 5 unanswered runs.
Yes, certainly. That's a recipe for success, you know, in the regular season, but especially in the postseason, Roger. You know, starting pitching, Connor Wilford, wow, you know, big moments throughout the game. And he navigated, in baseball, you know, the wonderful thing about this sport, Roger, as we all know, unlike any other sport, the most decisive moment can come at any time. And the third inning with the bases loaded and one out, and you know their best hitter up, a guy with 20 homers and hitting over 300, he gets a double play grounder, and then the next inning, second and third, you know, and one out, and was able to navigate out of that trouble and gave us a chance, as you said, to finally crack the scoreboard against a very, very good left-hander, you know, one of the best in the league. And it was the timely hitting, and it just followed through throughout the game with Ian Walters' homer, David Glancy, a big night. But Connor was really the story last night.
Yeah, it was what, is it like 11-3 this season? He's been fantastic. And Ian Walters, just, I mean, he's your all-star, right? He made the all-star team, and he's had an all-star season.
Absolutely. You know, I guess I can say it. You know, these votes are not too secretive, but – he was my vote for MVP, whether I managed him or not. I've, you know, for the definition of most valuable player, Roger, it's, you know, if you look at Major League Baseball, our league, you know, the value of Ian Walters is just incredible. And you look at a player on a team that you say, hey, that guy, how would you replace him? And that, to me, shows it. And last night, another outstanding game defensively at third. I got to tell you, I'm upset when a ball gets through the left side because I'm so used to him making every play. But he was outstanding defensively, the big home run, and the passion, of course, and his love for playing here, you know, in front of these fans, you know, shows every night.
And we ended up, Crystal Stone was covering for us last night at a conflict with the UAlbany football coaches show, and I couldn't get over there, but Crystal interviewed Wilford after the game, and boy, he was pumped up. He really was. I mean, to get that win last night and now to get you know, one win away from getting out of the wild card round and getting to that final series, it was big. And he seems like he is just on that mound with a lot of confidence these days. Is that what you're saying?
Oh yeah, he certainly is. He's really developed. You know, he came out of, you know, playing a high level of baseball in the Pac-12 against the Arizona States, USC's, Stanford's, you know, when he went to Washington State and joined us. And, you know, like a lot of guys, you know, his first year, it was a feeling out process, you know, for many of those players, and they come across the country, you know, it can be a wake up call. And, you know, he finds out he's pitching to an Oscar Campos that's played 10 years. And all of a sudden you realize, wow, and he has really developed into a wonderful starting pitcher, which he was in college, but he's taken it to the level of being a professional. And, you know, what was a great story is I believe, if I'm correct, his mom and dad flew in for yesterday's game. And, you know, with enough notice, you know, Connor, you know, was given the nod last week. And you know, so I found out that I guess his mom and dad arrived yesterday morning on a flight all the way out from the West Coast to flew into Albany. So, you know, a great moment for him and his family.
Yeah, that's great. I did not know that story. Thanks for sharing that one. That's awesome when the parents can be in the house to watch their son do big things on the mound at the Joe last night. And a good move on your part, too. You kept him back, right, from that last series. He stayed back here just to make sure he was in the right frame of mind, getting a good night's rest, all the things that you need to do when you're taking the ball in game one.
Yes, and one of those things, Roger, you look at, you know, these guys want to be a part of the club. These games in Ottawa meant everything, you know, to the Ottawa Ball Club we were playing. But, you know, anybody, you know, that's ridden a bus or taken some overnight trips, it was going to be a tough turnaround. It was an overnight, you know, to Ottawa, and then a quick three-game series and back on the bus. And he was able to get everything he needed and certainly, and, you know, something that we probably wanted to keep under the radar. Oscar was a little banged up from a couple hit-by-pitches last week in New Jersey. So, you know, he was able to stay back with Connor this weekend and get ready for this start. And it certainly, you know, hopefully it paid off. And hopefully Connor's got another start next week and another one after that.
Yeah, okay, absolutely. Keep it rolling here. What's the forecast for game two now? What are you doing on the mound?
We got Easton Kline's going to go on Friday. And, you know, and Easton's certainly been a big part of this ball club for 2 years. And I think I was asked last night, what's it going to take? And you give us another start like Connor Wilford last night, and that's exactly what it takes. And, you know, but Easton, and we'll have all the hands on deck for these next, you know, for Friday night and Saturday. You know, Steven Still is our Saturday starter if needed. You know, in the best case scenario, you know, we don't have to use him. And, you know, we get him ready for next week. But, you know, obviously, you know, the Sussex Club winning their division, you know, they've got the two games at home, you know, on Friday and if necessary Saturday. And you know, as we saw last night, you know, the runs are at a premium, and we were did just enough there to put ourselves on the board in that fifth, sixth inning, and that's what you have to do.
Will there be, Greg, a sense of urgency tomorrow night to get this thing wrapped up?
Oh, Roger, I certainly, you know, for me, yes. You know, I think sometimes, you know, you look forward to, well, we've got one. Hey, we'll play this one a little differently, but that sense of urgency, I think what you're saying is exactly what we'll have.
Yeah, right. Get it up. Let's not have this thing in deciding game three. And then how impressed last night? You know, on a night when a lot of kids are, you know, back to school, things change at the end of the summer, moving into the fall. How about the 2,400 fans that were at the ballpark last night?
Yes, you know, when they started filing in, I think the gates, you know, not quite sure, Roger. I don't want to say anything that I'm not supposed to, but I think they were opened up about 5 o'clock, yep. 5:15.
And, sounds right.
And you saw some people coming in, and it kept filing in. And what was even more impressive, what you just mentioned, school night, you know, certainly my kids are all grown, so I forget those nights and how tough it is to be out at 9 o'clock with your kids. You want them in bed, but I will tell you, families, season ticket holders, till the very last pitch on their feet in that ninth inning, it was, you know, and the players, you could tell how much they enjoyed it and just embraced it. Just a wonderful evening for everybody, and that's on a Wednesday night and in the first week of school, and couldn't be more proud of that for the front office ownership. You mentioned, you know, with the Gladstone family and Rick and Matt, what a wonderful job they all did.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, listen, it shows you the popularity of the Valley Cats and the baseball fans too, the pure baseball fans that know what's happening here and what a magical season this has been so far and could turn out to be could be a championship season. We'll see how it plays out. But Greg, thanks for a few minutes. Congrats on getting game one. Good luck in game two on Friday. We'll talk this time next week.
Thank you, Roger.
Appreciate it, Greg. That's Greg Taggart, the skipper of the Valley Cats. It is hour number three on Big Board Sports on a Thursday edition on 104.5 The Team ESPN Radio, and joined by one of our favorite guests because he tells it like it is, Jorge Castillo from ESPN.com on the state of the Yankees and the Mets as we are, 20 games or so left in the regular season. Almost playoff time, Jorge. It's Roger Weiland in Albany, New York, along with Michael Johnson Jr. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We're good, man.
Thanks,
we're good.
Jorge.
They're both playoff teams, right? Along with the Red Sox. You think all three of those teams are in? They're all three of our regional teams of interest, all in the postseason.
Yeah, I think so.
Can the Red Sox and the Yankees overtake Toronto and win the division?
I think one of them could. Yeah, I think this weekend that with the Blue Jays coming to the Bronx for a three-game series, that's a huge series. Yankees win two or three, Yankees sweep, and They're right there with the Blue Jays. I think it's 3.5 games. Both teams are behind Toronto right now. I think it's something that's possible, especially the Yankees. It's given their schedule, the way it lines up. You know, they got a few tough series here. They're in Houston right now, finishing up a series. And then they got another Toronto this weekend, and they got Boston next weekend. So besides that, it's the Orioles, it's the White Sox, it's opportunities for the Yankees to make up ground.
Yeah, because the narrative has been all season, Jorge, at least most of it, is that, you know, they do win the games that they're supposed to win against the teams that, you know, aren't great this year or under 500 or not a playoff team. But against the other teams, they struggle, which would be nice to see the Yankees win this series against Houston today and take 2 out of 3.
Yeah, for sure. And that narrative exists because it's largely been true. They've struggled against the Red Sox and the Blue Jays in particular this season. And then they crush bad teams. They crushed the Nationals last week. They crushed they won 3 of 4 against the White Sox. You know, last night the bullpen falls apart there without, you know, obviously with some help from the home plate umpire, you could argue, a lot of Yankee fans are arguing that, but they beat the Astros on Tuesday. And it's, like I said, tonight finishing up, like you said, if they could win 2 or 3, that'd be great. Toronto, Detroit, Boston, then it's Minnesota, Baltimore, White Sox, Baltimore to finish the season. So if they can kind of just stay within striking distance here, if they can win 2 or 3 against the Blue Jays, then they can, you know, hold their own against the Tigers and the Red Sox. Down the stretch, the last, you know, 15 or so games of the season, 13 I think it is, they really could finish strong.
We're talking with Jorge Castillo, covers Major League Baseball, the Yankees and the Mets for ESPN here on Hour Number 3, Big Board Sports, 104.5 The Team. ESPN Radio on the free 104.5 The Team app. Jorge, Devin Williams last night with the implosion, if you will, in the eighth inning, no accountability. Post-game, blaming the umpires, and he gets tossed with Aaron Boone. You know, why is it that Aaron Boone keeps going to Devin Williams in these high-leverage situations? And how concerned should Yankees fans be, including myself, with if he keeps getting roles like this and you get into October, it's kind of like he's going down the road of like a Aroldis Chapman, Clay Holmes comfort level, if you will, Jorge, late in the games with Devin Williams here recently.
Yeah, I think what Aaron Boone's trying to do, I know the public, and I know a lot of people see it as he's in the eighth inning. I think what they're trying to do is line him up against, you know, not the middle of the order. So if the middle of the order is coming up earlier in the game, it's a Luke Weaver in the seventh inning or whatever it is. Because at this point, the hierarchy is David Bednar, Luke Weaver, and then the rest. Because Camilo Duvall has not been very good since he came over. So right. It doesn't seem like Aaron Boone. I'll add Tim Hill to that mix. You know, Bednar, Tim Hill, and Luke Weaver have been really, really strong for them. Let's see how Fernando Cruz comes back. You know, from his injury, he's looked decent so far. He's looked like the old guy, the old Fernando Cruz, but you know, Boone, he has to work with what he has, and he has to deploy these guys in the best way possible. You know, at some point, Devin Williams was going to pitch last night. That's just the way it was going to be. He decided to go with him in the eighth, and you know, those four pitches that he said, you know, the umpire missed. Yeah, you can go back and see. Hey, yeah, okay, maybe he had a point there, but the point is, they imploded last night, and it wasn't just Devin Williams. It was Camilo Duvall balking in a run. It was kind of a, you know, things kind of went haywire for the Yankees, and we've seen that quite a bit this season. And it's going to be important for the Yankees to get Fernando Cruz going, because he was a guy early on in the season who was pretty locked down in the seventh inning. You know, if you can get Fernando Cruz, Tim Hill against lefties, Luke Weaver, and David Bednar, those four guys is your guys. At this point, it just doesn't seem like Camilo Duvall and Devin Williams have it.
All right, speaking of imploding, if you're Carlos Mendoza, I mean, you really have to think twice about giving the ball to Ryan Helsley right now. He just literally has been awful since the trade deadline. His ERA in 14 starts is over 11. At what point do you go enough is enough of handing the ball to Ryan Helsley in a big spot?
Yeah, I think we're getting there pretty soon here. This is a point of the season where not only – you know, you're fighting for this, for a playoff spot. You're fighting for playoff positioning, for home field advantage, for maybe a division title. And at some point, you got to say, all right, this guy that's the middle of the lineup, we just can't do that. And with Helsley, it's fascinating to see, because he was not the dominant Helsley from previous years before the Mets traded for him, but he was still very good. His fastball just wasn't playing in St. Louis this year for whatever reason, and it's been even worse here. He has the stuff. When you're just watching him, you're just like, this guy throws hard, has nasty, you know, just nasty stuff. And Carlos Mendoza mentioned this last week. It's like, we don't understand why hitters are so comfortable against him. And it might be a pitch-tipping thing. And if that's the case, they have to clean this up. And like you said, it's been very ugly for him. And this is a guy going into free agency as well. So it's personally, beyond the fact that he's struggling on a new team, you know, for, you know, you're that new kid at school, right? You want to impress all your teammates, your classmates, and it's gone terribly. He's going into free agency, and the Mets need to figure out how to get this fixed before October, because the Mets aren't deep in their bullpen. You know, they got Rodgers, they got Edwin Diaz. But beyond those guys, I mean, you know, they need Helsley to pass some kind of leverage, be to pitch in some leverage spots. You know, maybe not the eighth inning, but the sixth or seventh inning, where the games are often on the line in October.
And I'll tell you what, Jorge, it sounds like they're done with Kodai Senga in the starting rotation.
Yeah, it's very possible he's going to get sent down. You know, he has to accept being optioned to AAA to see, you know, to work things out. If not, a move to the bullpen is could be on the horizon here, and he just has not been good. It's fast. It's another guy who, before he was on the injured list, he was one of the best pitchers in baseball this year. Goes on the injured list, comes back in July, and has not been good. And the Mets, with how they're treating this, you know, we mentioned Helsley maybe not being put in leverage spots or the eighth inning, whatever. The Mets are going, hey, you guys aren't, if you're not good enough, we don't care how much you're getting paid. We don't know where, we don't care how veteran you are. We're not going to stand for this. We're going to call up Nolan McClain. We're going to call up Jonah Tong. And they might be calling up Brandon Sproat here very soon. So they are putting the pedal to the metal here. They recognize an opportunity here to, you know, first of all, get in the playoffs and make, you know, this is an opportunity for the Mets to win a World Series. You know, this is wide open. I know the Brewers are having a great year and the Dodgers are the Dodgers and whatever. The Mets recognize an opportunity. And frankly, David Stearns did not address the starting rotation adequately during the offseason or the trade deadline. So what they're doing now is they're bringing these young kids up, and they're going to put a lot of responsibility on their shoulders.
Speaking of those young kids, Jorge, both Jonah Tong and most recently Nolan McClain, and how impressive he's been through his first four starts with the six pitches he's got, and obviously the confidence. How impressed have you been with both those guys, especially McClain, through his first four starts in his career?
Super impressed. It's hard to, you know, we watch Nolan McClain. This is a guy who was a two-sport player in college for a bit. He was a quarterback at Oklahoma State, a backup quarterback. Then he was a two-way player on the baseball team. So when you add all, this guy was not he did not focus on pitching until last summer. He gave up being a two-way player last summer during the season. This is a guy who's been like 1 year of just focusing on pitching. Never mind two sports, you know, hitting and pitching. Like, this guy was doing a little bit of everything. Now he's just focusing on pitching, and he's ascended very, very quickly. He has this position player moxie about him. You could tell, you know, he played the field. You can tell he played quarterback. You know, he has a different sort of feel to him. All those pitches you mentioned, those are pitches that he's been adding, you know, and perfecting over the last year, because he's been allowed to focus just on pitching. And he has the nasty stuff. It's one of the best sweepers in baseball. The sinker that we saw Pitching Ninja, I think, posted something on it the other day. I think it was yesterday. Just the sinker and the sweeper overlay, that's a nasty mix. And Jonah Tong is a guy who, he wasn't even invited to big league camp this year. This is a guy that the Mets did not expect to make this kind of jump. Started in AAA, but he's arguably the best pitcher in minor league baseball this year. He's a slight guy on the smaller side, has that funky delivery. Everyone compares him to Tim Lincecum. That's high praise. You know, he's very young as well, and the Mets have a bright future. And the thing is, that bright future, they're hoping it starts this month and next month, because the Mets need them to win a World Series.
All right, Jorge, we'll see how it all plays out. Always enjoy your work. Always appreciate a few minutes on ESPN Radio in Albany.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jorge.
Thanks, Jorge.
Jorge Castillo, read his work on ESPN.com. All right, we're back on Big Board Sports. Mets get beat 6-2. Still in, you know, great shape to get to the wild card. And catching Philly, I think, is still going to be difficult. The biggest thing to figure out is what they're doing with the starting rotation. And now comes word yesterday, and I was all over this on this show. You cannot keep Kodai Senga there. So what are they asking Kodai Senga to do? To go to the minor leagues. They are asking Kodai Senga to go to the minors. Should have done that with Anthony Volpe a long, long time ago.
Yeah, in retrospect, you probably should
have. Go to the minors, yep, and get things worked out, dude. You might be a lot better. Now, I don't know that he has to agree.
He'll know by Friday,
to go to the
tomorrow.
Minors.
Yeah.
Maybe he goes to the bullpen. But clearly, the man that's going to be out of that rotation, and I was spot on with this yesterday, is Kodai Senga.
Yeah.
He's going to be out of that rotation, and Manaea might also be out of that rotation. Peterson survives. Clay Holmes, I guess, will survive, although he can't get you through four or five innings. He does okay for a while, and then he implodes. But I think Kodai Senga to the minors, to the bullpen, is 100% the right move. The Mets have seen enough of Kodai Senga. You saw what Manaea was able to do for you last year, so you still think he might have something left. You saw what David Peterson did for you last year. You think that he might be able to get it going and turn the corner in the right direction. You know you got your two young pitchers. Nolan McLain is going to be the ace of that staff moving forward. But Kodai Senga, we'll see what he wants to do either to the minors or to the bullpen. But Kodai Senga, mark my words, will be out of the starting rotation of the New York Mets.
Yeah, Kodai Senga, you nailed it yesterday there, Raj. And look, he's a shell of himself, and I think sometimes it's needed for a lot of guys. Yeah, in retrospect, Volpe probably should have. Francisco Alvarez was one of them earlier in the season, and he's been a much different player, a much different hitter. I just think with Senga, he looks lost there. Right, he's been plagued with injuries, and he had a 1.3 ERA. Now he's got an over 6 ERA since coming back from the IL, and he's going to have to be the odd man out. Someone has to be the odd man out with Nolan McLain and Jonah Tong getting called up.
Yeah,
and it's going to be Senga, it looks like, at least for the time being.
And then the other thing that the Mets need to do is they cannot give the ball to Ryan Helsley. They cannot do it.
They can't do it.
Ryan Helsley, at the trading deadline, when you graded out trading deadlines, you looked at the New York Mets and said, man, they got a stud. That guy is a great closer in Major League Baseball. He's going to be used for the New York Mets.
One of the best relievers the last 3 years.
One of the best. And he can't get out of his own way in New York. You know what that is? That's a New York thing. That is not adjusting to coming to New York under the big spotlight, under the pressure of pitching for the New York Mets.
You know who else is probably in that same boat? Is Mr. Devin Williams.
That's correct. So if you want to send a memo to your boy, Booney, and want to send a memo to Carlos Mendoza, guys, why do you keep going to these pitchers who are not delivering for you time and time again?
He throws fastballs that don't move.
I mean, they had a 3-2 lead when they brought him into the game.
Yes, they did.
Okay, they had a chance to sweep the Tigers, and he gives up a 3-run homer.
And they lose the game, what, 6-2?
6-2.
Yeah, 6-2. So you give up the unanswered runs. Just like that. I mean, it's a crushing loss.
He's fine in the postgame. He's like a deer in headlights. He doesn't understand what's going on. But clearly, there's something wrong with the way he's pitching right now. I don't know what it is. I'm not a pitching coach. But I also think that there is that adjustment of coming to New York, and not all players can adjust to being in New York, and I think he is one of them. All right, let's get to the locker room. What do we have here? Where are we going?
What do you want, Helsley?
Let's go with Ryan Helsley, who has been absolutely horrendous, nightmare for the Mets coming out of the bullpen. Here's Ryan on his latest implosion.
Yeah, I would say it's been okay. It could probably be a little better, you know. It feels like guys are swinging at 100 like it's 91 right now. So it's, when you feel like you got to be perfect out there, it's not a good thing. So just trying to get back to the basics and start at square one, try to get back to form and, be myself and help the team win.
What's Carlos Mendoza say? And I heard this earlier. Here's his take on Helsley after the 6-2 loss.
Yeah, I think for me, that's the biggest thing. It's his ability to elevate the fastball. We saw it again today. You know, that homer there is a fastball on the power zone from the lefties. When he's effective, when he's at his best, he's able to elevate the fastball. And right now, we're not doing that. This is a guy, you look up, he's 102. And they continue to take some really good swings. And then the way they're taking the breaking ball, too. And I don't think he's tipping related. He made some adjustments. He's kind of like talking ahead. How do we help this guy? You know, because right now we're not doing that. And when you got that type of stuff and they keep hitting it like that, something's going on here.
All right, that's Carlos Mendoza. Let's go Yankees here. And they're all whining about the umpiring, and Boone gets thrown out. I do give Boone credit, because if you listen to this sound cut in the postgame, he did not blame the 8-7 loss on the umpires.
I mean, obviously a tough inning, some close pitches all around. I thought the Astros from about third or fourth inning on just started putting some really good at-bats together and kind of pressured, first Will, then we had varying degrees of success down there. But, credit to them. They had a lot of really good at-bats against us. We didn't get a couple calls and got away.
All right. Now, I think he took the high road there. He may not have been thinking that, but that's what he did say to the media, and that was a good move by Aaron Boone. And then you get to Devin Williams, and he took a completely different approach to the loss last night.
Yeah, I mean, when you're making good pitches, which I was, you know, not getting those calls really changes the course of an at-bat. You know, obviously, Correa hit the double, so I'm kind of have my back against the wall right away. Made some really good pitches to Sanchez, which he missed two in that at bat. But yeah, I mean, I competed, but you know, I don't know. It's just ridiculous to have the inning that I had, and then for us to, you know, Jazz got the bat taken out of his hands on a pitch that was a lot further from the zone than pitches I was making.
That really irritates me.
Yeah, well,
as a Yankees fan, like, he's a whiner. What are you doing? I mean, like, yeah, they could have come back. Was it a ball on Jazz? Yes. You blew the game, dude, when you're in the game. I mean, that should irritate every Yankees fan out there. I mean, that makes the blood pressure go up listening to Devin Williams. This is a guy who was instrumental in wanting the Yankees to go have a beard policy now and was this big hype coming over and has been really bad in clutch situations. He shouldn't be anywhere near late inning situations.
Well, he hasn't really been good since day one.
Yeah, no, he had that stretch over the middle of the summer where he was doing better. I'm not a fan.
Overall,
I'm not a fan.
No trust. So Aaron Boone, why do you keep going to Devin Williams? Carlos Mendoza, why do you keep going to Ryan Helsley? How many other options do you have? There are other options. Go and figure out what might work a little bit better instead of rolling guys out there that fail every time you give them the ball.
There comes a time where it's a lost cause, and it's a tough decision to make as a manager, and it's throughout the history of sports in a Major League Baseball. Sometimes certain guys don't work out.
It's that time because it's the playoff time, and all these teams are going to be in the playoffs. That's why the Mets are making a 100% right move by getting Kodai Senga out of the rotation. They've given him every opportunity to try and be the ace of the staff, and he simply cannot do it for whatever reason. I feel bad for the guy. I think he's working like crazy at it. I think he feels badly about it, but he's not producing. Get Kodai Senga out of the starting rotation. That's what the New York Mets are going to do.
Yeah.
Don't give the ball to Ryan Helsley in a big spot anymore. Don't do it. I mean, if you want to give the ball to Kodai Senga, do it in mop-up duty sometime for an inning in the eighth inning.
Yeah, well,
let him come in
exactly
and pitch in a meaningless game that you know you're going to win and you're up 10-2.
Helsley should be nowhere near it, especially when you have Edwin Diaz. All right, bring in anybody else to set up Edwin Diaz. And for the Yankees, too, Devin Williams is now in Aroldis Chapman, Clay Holmes territory, if not worse. He shouldn't even be anywhere near like the sixth or seventh inning, maybe in the playoffs. But October, you rely on your bullpens in high leverage, one run games, I should say. Man, I'm still fired up with that postgame quote he said. I mean, just no accountability. I mean, you can blame the umps all you want. Were the umpires bad last night in the Yankees-Astros games for both teams? Yes, they were. That doesn't dictate who wins or loses the game.